Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
These attacks and their mounting human cost are unacceptable. The U.S. must halt such attacks and take all measures necessary to prevent the extrajudicial killing of people aboard these boats, whatever the criminal conduct alleged against them.
Despite mounting international criticism, U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has formally announced what he called Operation Southern Spear. The U.S. has already blown up 20 boats in Latin America, killing at least 80 people, claiming they're drug traffickers without evidence. We'll speak to Human Rights Watch and also look at their new report, You've Arrived in Hell, about the Venezuelans sent by the U.S. to El Salvador's Secat mega prison, where they were tortured and abused. Then the trillion-dollar war machine. We'll speak to Bill Hartung about how runaway military spending drives America into foreign wars and bankrupts us at home. Finally, how did he do it? We'll talk to Zoran Mamdani's field director about his historic mayoral campaign in New York, fueled by over 104,000 volunteers.
Every door knock and every phone call is a statement of belief that politics is for all of us.
Because of you, we will make this city one that working people can love and live in again.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has announced Operation Southern Spear, a military campaign he said would target narco-terrorists across the Western Hemisphere. Hegseth's announcement on social media came as the Pentagon said it'd blown up another boat in the Caribbean, reportedly killing four people aboard. It's the 20th such strike, bringing the reported death toll to 80 people. The Pentagon claims the boats were carrying drugs, but officials have acknowledged they don't know who's been killed. The attacks have been condemned as unlawful extrajudicial killings by the UN's human rights chief, governments including Mexico, Colombia, and the European Union, and U.S. lawmakers, among others. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Marco Rubio has denied reports by CNN that the United Kingdom stopped sharing intelligence on drug trafficking vessels over concerns about the U.S. strikes.
I did see a CNN report yesterday. I'm not going to go into great detail than to say that it's a false story. It's a fake story.
We'll have more on the boat strikes and the Trump administration's military buildup in the Caribbean after headlines. In Gaza, officials warn more than 900,000 displaced Palestinians face the risk of flooding as a storm system brings heavy rains and colder temperatures to a region where Israeli attacks have left 85% of road, water and sewage networks damaged or destroyed. Municipal authorities warn entire neighborhoods are at risk of being flooded by overflow from sewage stations left damaged from Israeli attacks or unable to operate due to a lack of fuel. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces shot and killed two Palestinian boys in a village north of Hebron, then seized their bodies. Separately, three Palestinians, including a 14-year-old child, were injured after Israeli forces fired on them during a raid southeast of occupied East Jerusalem. This comes amidst a record wave of violent attacks by Israeli settlers on Palestinians during this year's olive harvest. On Tuesday, masked Israeli settlers stormed a dairy plant near the town of Beit Lid, setting fire to vehicles. And on Thursday, settlers set fire to the Hajj Ahmedi Mosque in the Palestinian village of Deir Istia. This is local activist Nazmi Salman.
This attack comes within the framework of the declared war against the Palestinian people by settlers with the support of the occupation government. This attack violated the sanctity of places of worship and mosques. There were racist slogans written on the northern walls of the mosque.
In Ukraine, at least 6 people were killed and 30 others injured as Russia launched a massive overnight assault on nearly every district of the capital, Kyiv. Officials said Russia's attack involved 430 drones and 18 missiles, making it one of the biggest on Ukraine's capital since Russia's full-scale invasion in 2022. Many of the attacks struck residential high-rise buildings, scattering debris and sparking huge fires.
I was terrified, so terrified I didn't know what to do first. Should I rescue myself and my child, or should I run to help others because many people were screaming and needed help?
Russian drones also struck Ukraine's southwestern Odessa region, killing at least 2 people. Meanwhile, Russian officials say at least 1 person was injured when Ukraine launched drone attacks on Russia's Belgorod region. And President Volodymyr Zelensky said his forces had fired long-range cruise missiles into Russia. This all comes as Zelensky responded to a growing corruption scandal by firing Ukraine's justice and energy ministers, who are accused of taking part in a massive bribery scheme. Here in the United States, many food banks are reporting record demand, even after the longest government shutdown came to an end with a promise to restore SNAP food assistance benefits that the Trump administration withheld beginning November 1st. A tally by the Associated Press found about 2/3 of states had issued only partial benefits or none at all before the government shutdown ended late Wednesday. Meanwhile, the White House says the Bureau of Labor Statistics may never release October data on inflation and job losses, blaming the government shutdown. Data from the private sector firm ADP estimates the U.S. economy lost 11,000 jobs per week through late October. Federal agents in Chicago have released preschool teacher Diana Santiana Galeano, a mother of 2 from Colombia, whose arrest by ICE drew international outrage. Her arrest in front of parents and children by federal agents who did not produce a warrant came even though she had authorization to work in the daycare center and had undergone a background check. She's returning to work today at the Rayito de Sol Spanish Immersion Early Learning Center. Meanwhile, Border Patrol Chief Gregory Bovino has reportedly left Chicago and will travel to North Carolina to oversee a new immigration crackdown in the city of Charlotte. Local officials, including the Mecklenburg County Sheriff, say they were given no advance warning of the deployment. The Trump administration is also reportedly planning to surge federal agents in New Orleans, Louisiana. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops has rebuked the Trump administration's mass deportation policies, calling for an end to what it called dehumanizing rhetoric and violence. The bishops issued their statement after a nearly unanimous vote at their annual fall meeting in Baltimore. This is the conference's general secretary, Reverend Michael J.K. Fuller.
In cities across the United States, our migrant brothers and sisters, many of them are fellow Catholics, face a culture of fear, hesitant to leave their homes and even to attend church for fear of being randomly harassed or detained. Holy Father, please know that the bishops of the United States, united in our concern, will continue to stand with migrants and defend everyone's right to worship free from intimidation.
At the same meeting, U.S. bishops voted in favor of a ban on gender-affirming care for transgender patients at Catholic hospitals. The Trump administration's issued new visa restrictions for foreigners and immigrants seeking to visit or live in the United States. Under the latest directive, applicants may be denied a U.S. visa over certain medical conditions such as diabetes or obesity and lack of economic resources and assets. The State Department's reportedly directed embassy and consular staff to rigorously vet visa applicants to demonstrate they will not seek any public benefits, including food aid from the U.S. federal government, saying such people could become a public charge and drain U.S. resources. Immigration rights advocates have denounced the measure as dangerous, saying it'll further curtail the already limited legal pathways for people to come to the United States. The rocket company, founded by Amazon multi-billionaire Jeff Bezos, has successfully landed the first stage of its giant new launch vehicle in a major challenge to Elon Musk's SpaceX, which dominates the commercial space industry. Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket took off from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station Thursday afternoon, carrying a pair of NASA space probes bound for Mars. By successfully landing its booster stage on a drone ship downrange, Blue Origin seeks to dramatically cut the cost of launching satellites to Earth orbit and beyond. That's central to plans by Jeff Bezos to build a constellation of internet satellites to compete with Elon Musk's Starlink, which has about 9,000 operational satellites on orbit. In Seattle, first-term mayor Bruce Harrell has conceded defeat in his re-election fight against community organizer Katie Wilson, who campaigned on a message of affordability in a city where the cost of living has soared. Wilson's platform calls for progressive taxation to raise revenue from the wealthiest households and corporations to pay for affordable housing and social programs benefiting families. Wilson spoke to reporters Thursday after the mayor conceded.
I want everyone in this great city of ours to have a roof over their head. I want universal child care and free K-8 summer care. I want world-class mass transit. I want great, safe public spaces where kids can run around with abandon. I want stable, affordable housing for renters. I want social housing. I want much more land and wealth to be owned and stewarded by communities instead of corporations. I want a robust economy with thriving small businesses, great living wage jobs, and strong rights for workers.
And more than 1,000 workers at 65 Starbucks stores across the United States held a one-day strike Thursday to protest Starbucks' campaign of union busting and its refusal to negotiate union contracts. The baristas held the action on Red Cup Day, typically one of Starbucks' busiest days of the year. Starbucks Workers United calls the company one of the most egregious violators of U.S. labor law in modern history, with the National Labor Relations Board finding over 500 labor law violations. Another 700 pending unfair labor practice charges have yet to be litigated. This is Ray Shao, a 23-year-old barista at a Starbucks here in Manhattan.
I'm putting in overtime every week just so I could afford my rent, so I could afford bills. It's crazy that we're working a full-time job and I still can't afford to pay the basic necessities I need to live. And meanwhile, our CEO is making $96 million and he for only 4 months of work. And meanwhile, our CEO is riding in a private jet and I'm barely able to afford the MTA fare to go to work.
On Thursday, New York Mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani wrote online, while workers are on strike, "I won't be buying any Starbucks, and I'm asking you to join us. Together, we can send a powerful message. No contract, no coffee," Mamdani wrote. To see our interview with the field director of Zoran Mamdani's campaign, go to democracynow.org, where we'll interview her at the end of today's broadcast. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has announced the launch of Operation Southern Spear to target suspected drug traffickers, he says. In a post on X, Hegseth wrote, quote, "Today I'm announcing Operation Southern Spear, led by Joint Task Force Southern Spear and Southcom. This mission defends our homeland, removes narco-terrorists from our hemisphere, and secures our homeland from the drugs that are killing our people," unquote. The announcement comes as the Pentagon continues to amass warships in the Caribbean. The USS Gerald R. Ford aircraft carrier arrived earlier this week. The U.S. now has 15,000 military personnel in the region. It's the largest buildup in the region in decades, kids, according to the New York Times. Over the past 2 months, the U.S. has blown up at least 20 boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific. The latest strike killed 4 people on Thursday. The Pentagon claims the boats were carrying drugs, but officials have acknowledged they don't know who's been killed. Critics have denounced the strikes as illegal extrajudicial killings. We begin today's show with Juan Papia, the America's Deputy Director at Human Rights Watch. We welcome you to Democracy Now, Juan. Begin by talking about Operation Southern Spear and what this means.
Amy, thank you for having me. We don't know what Operation Southern Spear means. The Secretary has not provided details, but we have every reason to be concerned because in the buildup of this announcement, as you mentioned, 80 people have been killed in what are extrajudicial executions under international law. There is no denying that the problem of narcotics in the United States and the problem of organized violence in Latin America are serious, but they are not armed conflicts, and the U.S. government cannot pretend otherwise to circumvent its obligations under international law. The U.S. government cannot strike boats as it pleases. These are extrajudicial executions, which are grave violations.
And Juan, isn't it true that most of the drugs that come into the United States, whether it's fentanyl or cocaine, come through Mexico? And yet the Trump administration is directing all of its attention to the Caribbean and the Pacific just off the coast of South America.
Well, fentanyl comes from Mexico. Cocaine comes mostly from Colombia, in most cases through the Pacific. But regardless of the drug routes that are being employed to bring these drugs, striking boats is not the appropriate way to respond to organized crime. These people should be brought to justice. They should be prosecuted. And importantly, the United States should be supporting effort to dismantle these organized crime groups. Striking vessels in the Caribbean are extrajudicial executions which are banned by international law.
And has there been any attempt by international organizations, especially the United Nations, to address this issue?
Well, the UN Human Rights Chief, Volker Turker, has expressed concern. Have a consternation about these violations. We have seen expressions of concern by Latin American governments, Colombia, Mexico, Brazil, amongst others. And we at Human Rights Watch have a team ready to document what is happening in the Caribbean and to make sure that we expose and denounce violations of human rights law as they are occurring.
We're talking to Juan Papier, the America's Deputy Director at Human Rights Watch, and our own Juan Gonzalez. Juan, you were in Panama for the U.S. invasion. This was during President George H.W. Bush. You certainly know and have studied and have been there throughout Latin America when it comes to U.S. foreign policy. Can you talk about your observations of what's happening here with these extrajudicial killings of scores of people? It is astounding that the U.S. has not presented any evidence that they are narco terrorists, as Pete Hegseth says.
Yeah, well, Amy, I think with the, especially now with not only with these attacks on boats and these killings, but now with the arrival of an unprecedented military force, we're talking the aircraft carrier, the largest aircraft carrier in the world, the USS Gerald Ford, has just arrived in the Caribbean with another 5,000 troops and several other battleships accompanying it. We now have 15,000 U.S. troops in the region, thousands of them based in Puerto Rico. The government has reopened Roosevelt Rhodes Naval Base, which they had closed, and U.S. planes at the old Ramey Air Force Base in Aguadilla. All of these soldiers are not there to hang out. They're there to take military action. We have to be clear. Even though the government hasn't announced it, it's clear that this is what's coming. Our government is embarking on a totally unprovoked military assault and regime change operations in Latin America. The Trump administration has openly accused not one, but two Latin American presidents of drug dealing without any proof. Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela and Gustavo Petro of Colombia, and threatened to kill Maduro. This is a bizarre return to the gumboat diplomacy of the early 20th century. And the big prize being not democracy or not stopping drug trafficking, but grabbing the Venezuelan oil fields, the largest oil reserves in the world. The problem is this is not the old Latin America that the U.S. could bully at will. The countries of the region are today independent sovereign states. For most of South America, the U.S. is no longer even the main trading partner. China is. Next door to Venezuela is Colombia, the country that for more than 50 years was involved in the longest running civil war in the region's history and has perhaps the largest number of veteran left-wing guerrillas in Latin America's history. The governments of Brazil, Mexico, Colombia, Honduras, Cuba, and Nicaragua will not just quietly accept U.S. aggression on Venezuela. President Maduro has appealed for international volunteers to come to Venezuela to oppose any U.S. invasion. And you can bet that perhaps thousands of young Cubans, Nicaraguans, Colombians, and other Latin Americans will do just that. So progressives and people of goodwill of the U.S. and Puerto Rico, it's time for those of us here to stand up and say that we will not support any attempt to bring back the old gumboat diplomacy and to invade another Latin American country. And we need to do it soon because this stuff is moving very quickly.
Juan, you mentioned that you have Venezuela, the largest oil producer in Latin America, that the U.S. is targeting. Then, to everyone's shock, including many in his own administration, Trump announced he's going to attack Nigeria, which is Africa's most populous country and the largest oil producer in Africa. He said that the attack would be vicious and sweet. And then you go back to Iraq, one of the largest oil producers in the Middle East before the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003 after 9/11, which Iraq had nothing to do with.
Yes, it's a clear, continued policy of the United States to control oil production as much as it can, as it continues, as the Trump administration continues on this crazy, bizarre attempt to corner as much oil supply as it can, as it continues to deny the existence of the climate change or the climate catastrophe we face.
Well, coming up, you've arrived in hell. A new Human Rights Watch report details how Venezuelans sent by the U.S. to El Salvador's Cecat mega prison were tortured and abused. Juan Papier will stay with us. We hope you do, too.
Soy el terreno invadido, naturaleza robada. Soy pensamiento indebido, grito de voz silenciada. Soy el dolor que no siente, soy la memoria olvidada. Soy material resistente, con rabia despellejada.
Against Everything by Ile, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The nightmare began the moment they took me off the plane. Those are the words of 26-year-old Gonzalo, one of 252 Venezuelan immigrants in the U.S. who were flown to El Salvador earlier this year in the dead of night and indefinitely imprisoned at the Salvadoran mega prison Cecat, the terrorism confinement center. The detainees endured about 4 months of confinement and abuse with no ability to communicate with the outside world. They were finally released to Venezuela in a prisoner exchange in July. A new report based on interviews with 40 of the men and 150 others with credible knowledge of their confinement has just been released by Human Rights Watch and Cristasal, a human rights organization that works across El Salvador and Central America. The report is headlined, "You've Arrived in Hell, Torture and Other Abuses Against Venezuelans in El Salvador's Mega Prison." We're joined now by co-authors Juan Papier, America's Deputy Director at Human Rights Watch, as well as Noah Bullock, the Executive Director of Cristasal. They're both joining us in Washington, D.C. Noah, let's start with you. What did you find? Why were these men sent to the mega prison, SECOT, and what happened to them?
Hi, Amy, and thank you for the coverage. Yeah, I think your question is the same question that those men asked when they found themselves in SECOT, wondering what they were doing there. About 252 Venezuelans were sent to the Salvadoran prison, the terrorist confinement center, SECOT, without any due process. No judges convicted them of anything. And they were sent to be imprisoned indefinitely in a place, in a prison system, where we know the human rights violations have been systematic. What we found in the report are also more about the profiles of who these people were. The idea that they were sent to this prison was predicated on the use of War Powers Act, the Alien Enemies Act, and the idea that these people were national security threats to the American people. But in our report, that allegation is unfounded. We use public information requests to get access to criminal background checks, both in the United States and countries of transit. We also use FOIA requests to get access to information about their immigration status. These people were migrants. 19 of them had suffered persecution directly in Venezuela before they left the country. And 65 of them, of the 130 that we were able to investigate, were in the United States and had open asylum claims pending when they were forcibly removed. These people were migrants seeking protection. They weren't terrorists or security threats to the United States.
And what were some of the, Noah, what were some of the abuses that they sustained? Could you give some details?
Sure. This report for us, our organization has been documenting torture and killings in Salvadoran prisons for the last 4 years almost, under a state of emergency that's been in place in El Salvador. And so what we saw in this report is the continuation of similar patterns. One of the conclusions we make is that torture is institutionalized in Salvadoran prisons. It's a state policy. It's almost as if the prison guards operate on a protocol. It's impossible that this is the actions of bad guards or bad apples. People were subjected to beatings almost daily. Upon arrival, they were beaten. When they asked for food and water, they were beaten. When they asked for medical care on the way to the clinic, they were beaten. They were often denied food, water, clothing as a basic hygiene as a tool of punishment or reprisals. And in the case of the report, we also showed how the Venezuelans resisted and protested the beatings, but then were subjected again to more beatings. There was a punishment cell called the Island in their module, where a tiny space, a solitary confinement cell, where they were taken and beaten regularly. They would be deprived for hours of food and water, or in some cases days. And even, sadly, we were documented cases of sexual abuse. And it's important to note that the testimonies were consistent across 40 different individuals who gave testimonies. We were able to document and corroborate their testimonies with photographic evidence that was assessed by independent forensic experts.
And Juan Papier, these guards at times wore hoods and took videos and photos of the beatings that they were exacting on their prisoners.
Yes, we were able to document, based on the interviews with these detainees, that the guards wear hoods. They didn't share their names. They use aliases. They were clearly trying to hide their identities while they were torturing these Venezuelan migrants who, in many cases, fled the dictatorship of Maduro in Venezuela, came to the United States seeking asylum, seeking protection, and ended up in a prison, in a mega prison in El Salvador, where they were brutally tortured.
I'm wondering, Noah Bullock, if you can talk more about the secretive nature of SECOT. how there is practically no access to the facility. And this question, are any people, Venezuelan or others, sent from the United States still there? And of course, how many Salvadorans are there and what happens to them?
That's right, Amy. The Salvadoran prison system has been under a state of emergency for almost 4 years. And in that state of emergency, families, defense lawyers have no access to the prisons. There's no public information about who is being held in the Salvadoran prison system. Our organization